to record our call. And let's see. Yes, we're doing that. Okay, great. All right, so, gang, let's get focused. Now, I know when you're on a conference call, it's easy to half-listen. You think multitasking is a good idea, and so you start to do other stuff while you listen. Please don't do that. For your benefit, I like you to stay focused and to get the most value out of the call. So a lot of people calling in. We have some new people on the call. Let me just go over some background real quick of the purpose of the calls. First, I do want to welcome everybody, especially the new power agents. I know we've got people from all different parts of the world literally calling in. And so for those of you that had to get up at some odd hour to get on the call, I appreciate you. Thank you very much for doing that. I'm very excited for us to be together. This is the beginning of the year. This will help us get focused and set the tone. So that's the purpose here. Now I'm going to go through questions. People have emailed me questions ahead of time. If you email me now, I won't be looking at it because I don't check my email while I'm doing the call. In the future, if you guys want to ask a question to cover on this call, the best way to do that is to either email me directly at Darryl@darrylspeaks.com. Or just go to the website, thepowerprogram.com, and you'll see a place to ask me a question. That's the same email, and it'll come to me directly. We're going to go through questions first that I got sent to me ahead of time, and then if I have the time, I'll open up the call to everybody else and answer your questions. I want to help you get ready for 2016 to be a great year. Now, I do want to start off with, if Laura Hoffman, are you on the phone? And by the way, yes, you are, Laura, I see you there. Laura, hit *7 on your keypad, and that will take you off. There you are. Hi, Laura, how are you?
Hey, Darryl, how are you doing?
Yeah, listen, I'm doing great, man. You started off my new year, the first day of the new year. You send this lovely email. I was going to read it if you weren't on the call. Could you just, share with everybody what you sent me, and because I want them to hear that.
Oh, trying to remember. What would it be easier to read it, or do you want?
Okay, I can. Yes, I'll read it for you. Everybody, Laura said, I've been wanting to tell you I find these calls fantastic and so very valuable. I've been an agent for close to 15 years, but I always find to learn something from you, and I love how positive the calls are. Just before the holidays, you encouraged us to tell prospective sellers not to wait until after the holidays to sell. I followed your direction, and my seller went on the market on December 9th. The home had great activity, went under contract in less than 7 days. It was priced a little high for the market at $455,000, and the seller is so relieved to get it done so fast. You also put an article in the newsletter about selling during the holidays, and last week another seller called you. They read the article, and they said they had no idea that it would be a good time to sell during this time, so even though we're after the holidays, you're going to be getting that listing too. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, that was a real surprise. Well, first of all, a great surprise that they're actually reading the newsletter, and then second of all, just to get the other listing, it was a verbal on the phone. He's like, "Yes, I want to hire you. So let's meet." You know, and I was going on vacation. He said, "Let's meet as soon as you get back." So. That's just the other one. So I got one, ready to close in about 4 weeks, and then I've got a new listing coming up, a nice one too. So I really want to thank you because I've been saying for years to people, well, just wait for after the holidays, and I thought, I'm going to change strategy. I'm going to listen to what you said, and it really worked.
Awesome. Really. Well, I'm really glad. So that, that one listing that sold at $455,000, that probably paid for the Power Program membership for the next, 20 years.
You're right. You're right.
Well, I'm going to ask you, Laura, is there anything that you need help with, being that you were so kind to give me the gift of that email? But before you do, I know some people are probably wondering what we're talking about, and so I just want to let people know. Gang, last month I had put on the what's on the Power Program website under the word classroom. There's a lot of gifts for you. And if you haven't checked them out, you need to check them out. One of the gifts was a flyer. There's actually two flyers that talks about why a homeowner should not wait until after the holidays to sell their house. And so I talked about that last month, and Laura obviously listened to me and implemented it. So there's a couple of things I want to say about that. Number one, even though it's after the holidays, that flyer that I'm referencing under the word classroom at the powerprogram.com website, you can still tweak it and use it. You know, when somebody says this is maybe a slow time of year because of the weather or the cold or whatever it is, that flyer, those concepts you can still use, I'd say, in the month of January. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, this call is an hour. We cover a lot. There's a magazine every month. This month is a December-January issue, so it's the same magazine from last month. But there's so much value in the program every month, you're not going to implement everything. So if you just implement one or two things that we talk about either on the call or from the website, you know, you do that every month, and look what happened here for Laura. So don't get overwhelmed thinking that you have to do everything, because if you get overwhelmed, I know what you do, because it's human beings, you won't do anything. So congratulations on that, Laura. Thank you for being
a
power agent. Now, is there something I can help you with? Is there something that you want to ask me you're struggling with of any kind?
No, I think I'd like to listen to some of the other questions that are coming up. I really appreciate.
Yep.
I really appreciate, you know, the information that I've gotten. I've always learned something. And like you said, sometimes it's so much information that I just write down one or two things that I'm going to implement that month. And I do it, and it's been working. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, great. So now to put you back on hold, I think if you do it the same way you came in, if you hit *7, that should put you back on mute, I think. Okay? Thanks again, Laura.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
All right. You're welcome. So, all right. Now, again, if anybody wants to ask me a question, the way to do that is just hit *7 on your keypad, and that will unmute you. Now, let me start with these questions here. Maggie Martinez, if you're on the call, unmute yourself with hitting *7 one time. If not, I'm going to still read her question. She asked me a question last month. We didn't get to it, so I want to make sure I take care of her this month. Okay, so here's what she asked me. She said, there's so many different ways to generate leads and tools in the industry that can get expensive, like Zillow, Boomtown, et cetera. What do you recommend for lead generation without having to empty your bank account? There's, first of all, those of you know that I'm a big fan of Red-X, and Red-X to me is the best way to generate FSBOs and expireds as far as getting those leads. As far as other ways, though, because Red-X is specifically to FSBOs and expireds, and I just want to remind everybody that as power agents, you have a special deal with Red-X that no one else has. And that is, if you go to the website darrylspecial.com, Darryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, special.com, the code is going to be SMILE. The coupon code is SMILE, and then that will get rid of the $150 setup fee. You don't pay that, and you also do not pay the first 30 days of that program. Now, let's see. The other thing I would say, though, about Zillow and Boomtown and any of the others, here's my thoughts. There's no perfect solution. I've heard agents tell me that, you know, some love Zillow as far as the leads. Some say, I hate Zillow. And the same is true about all of them. I don't know why it works for some agents in certain cities and not for others. In other cities, I don't understand how they do what they do too much. So here's my recommendation. Number one is you should try one if you have the money. Number two is I would negotiate a contract that isn't long term. You know, if you're seeing after, if they want to sell you a year or 6 months, I would try and whatever they propose, I would, and even if it's on the website, I would make that phone call and say, you know what, I'm willing to give you guys a shot, but I'm not willing to make that kind of commitment. So I need you to give me a better, shorter term for me to see if I'm going to generate the leads. You know, if I generate the leads, I don't work, then that's on me. But I want to first see that I'm getting leads to even work. So that would be my suggestion there. Just try one and negotiate a shorter contract. The other one that people seem to love is the Kohl's directory. Now, the Kohl's directory doesn't generate leads, but with the Kohl's directory, and again, you spell that C-O-L-E-S, and, you know, we've negotiated something with them. I'm not sure if we have. We're in the middle. My company is in the middle of talking to them. But Kohl's directory, what they do is they can actually download digitally a farm area. So it's not going to generate leads like Zillow or Boomtown, but if you want to start farming and you're going to mail to a specific group of people, let's say, you know, 1,000 people in your neighborhood, Kohl's directory is perfect and awesome for that. And they have some other bells and whistles, so I would check them out too. The last thing I'm going to say about Maggie's question is that for the past several years, I have been telling agents not to farm, not to do mailings, not to do postcards, that the best was only FSBOs and expireds. Now, I still believe FSBOs and expireds are always the best, but the market has changed now. We've gotten through the horrible bubble busting and short sales, and there's still little pockets here and there in the United States, but overall, the real estate market is healthy once again. And because of that, I do think it's something for you to consider this year, going into 2016, of doing mailings on a monthly basis to generate listing leads, free CMAs, things like that. Now, I'm not going to talk about right now on this call what you should be sending out every month. I just want you to start to think of that concept. I will tell you a great company that has so I'm going to retract what I just said. I am going to give you the name of a company that has incredible stuff to mail out. And I love this company. It's called Prospects Plus. Prospects Plus, P-R-O-S-P-E-C-T-S plus, P-L-U-S.com. All one word, Prospects Plus. And that prospect is a plural, actually, Prospects Plus. Anyway, they get their catalog. They've got they're an incredible company. I highly recommend them. Now, here's the thing, though, about farming, gang. You've got to at least have the money put away for 6 months because it's going to take you that long to see any return. So let's just say, for example, you're going to mail out something that costs $1 with postage, so the whole kit and caboodle, and you have 1,000 people, or let's say 500. That's $500 a month you're going to be investing in this. You're going to be into this for at least $3,000 until you get one listing from it. That's how you've got to think. That's how you've got to plan. So don't anybody jump to farming until you're financially ready to do that. Okay, now, next question that Maggie had. She had one other question. That as a starting broker, I want to recruit new agents. What recommendations can you offer in hiring agents, as many competitors are offering 100% commission? I know most of us on this call are not broker owners, but Maggie is a power agent, and I do want to address it real quick. So I won't spend a lot of time on this. Number one, as a broker, you never compete on price. You know, don't try and do better commissions. That is important to, I think, most of us agents, but that's not the main thing we look for. One of the best companies that have seen that's growing by leaps and bounds is a company in Lindenhurst, New York, Long Island, New York, and the name of that company is Exit Family. Now, Joanne Mills is a personal friend of mine. But if you were to just Google that Exit Family, you're going to see something. What you're going to see is culture. The most successful companies, I'm going to speak to a great company, Diamond Realty in Shreveport, Louisiana, flying out today to go speak for their company tomorrow. You know, they have a culture of family, and just like Joanne does with her company in New York. It doesn't have to be a family culture. My point is there has to be a culture. Agents look for a comfortable place to work, a place where it's like a second home. What I have found is that when an agent feels comfortable with where they work, they like the people they work with, it actually empowers them to want to come to the office, to participate, to prospect, to work. So to me, the best recruiting tool is the culture of the company, and everything stems from that, which, by the way, I will share something for all of us on the call. If I'm not saying any of you should change companies, but I'm going to tell you something. I was at on New Year's Eve. I was at my stepsister-in-law. I know that sounds weird. My family tree is more like a bush. It's very complicated. But anyway, I was at my stepsister-in-law's house, I struck up a conversation with a friend of hers who was an IT person for a county company, group, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, she was just going on about how much she loves her job. And a lot of you know I wrote my book on how to design a life worth smiling about, and so I was curious about what was making her smile, what was making her happy. So I started to ask her questions. And I'm laughing at myself because I just realized that I was working New Year's Eve. But anyway, what hit me real clear in talking to her is she's such a happy lady, is she loves what she works. And, you know, I think if we look at, you know, I think all of us on this call, we want to improve ourselves, we want to improve our business, but we do, ultimately, we want our lives to work. You know, we want us to be happy. We want to have a life worth smiling about. And, you know, when you think about our jobs, you know, we do, especially in real estate, there's 168 hours in a week. Now, if you work a regular 9-to-5 job and you're putting in 40 hours a week, you know, 40 hours a week represents, you know, a quarter of the, is that right? Am I doing the right? Yeah, it represents a quarter of your whole life. You know, your job represents 25% of your whole life. Now, in real estate, we usually put more hours than 40 hours a week. So, you know, some of us would say more than a third of our lives are eating, sleeping, real estate. So if you're not happy with where you are, you know, that means you're going to spend a third of your time unhappy. So, you know, make sure that as you go into 2016 is that you create an environment that empowers you, that you are happy. If you've got people in your life, whether it's at your job or in your personal life, you know, try and, you know, stay away from that as best as you can. Of course, always remember it's always greener on the other side of the fence. There's no perfect relationship, no perfect job. There's no perfect anything. But I think you all get the point. You know, at least look at that question. So that's it for Maggie. I hope that helped her and everybody else. Now, let's move her to the answered question, and let's look at Tammy Cook. Tammy Cook, are you on the call? If you are, please hit *7 to take yourself off mute. *7, take yourself off mute. All right, so she said, how do you handle family or friends that want to list their home for less commission? Okay, so, you know, gang, if you have anybody that wants to, you know, have you cut your commission, especially if it's family or friends, here's what I'd say about that, is that when you're talking to your family and your friends about representing them to sell their house or to buy a house, you know, if they don't bring it up, you probably should even bring it up just to get it out of the way, you know. And here's how I probably would bring it up. If Tammy were on the call, I would say, you know, Tammy, before we get started, I just want to be clear about something, is that especially in the sales business, sometimes people will think that, well, can you give me a better deal on this thing that I'm buying? And so I want to just address that right up front. I would love to work with you. I would. And by the way, gang, this conversation would be the same whether it's buying or selling. You know, Tammy, I would love to work with you, but here's what I'm going to ask you to do, is because my commission, because it's tied to the company and it's tied to other parts of our business, I really can't discuss, like, getting a discount or family pricing because it just doesn't work that way. So what I want to make sure is that you want me to help sell your house or you want me to help buy your house because you think I'm the best. You think I'm the best skilled agent to help you in the process. Don't come to me because we're family. If you feel that I cannot help you or you feel like there's an agent that might do a better job than me, then I truly, honestly want you to work with that person because I would say this with it about any client. And because you are family, I care about you and I want you to feel good about your decision. So I just want you to know it's no hard feelings, but you should hire me based on my skill. Not because there's going to be a family discount, because there isn't. So I would have that kind of conversation. I will tell you something, gang. I've had agents come to me, and they said, you know, Darren, I got really upset because my neighbor, you know, knows I'm in real estate, and they listen with somebody else. Or my aunt or my uncle, they bought a house from another agent, not through me. And here's what I can tell you. When that happens, you should never, almost never, almost never, get upset with your family or friend or your neighbor. What you should do is look in the mirror to even look at, why did that happen? What are you creating that has people not think of you when it comes to buying or selling real estate, especially if they're your neighbor, your friend, or your family? And if they do know that you're in real estate and they still choose to not hire you, well, then there's something about the perception you have that you're putting out there, that perhaps, you know, you complain too much, or you share stuff about how real estate is hard, or if you don't respect your company, or you don't even respect your business. If you have a family, friend, or neighbor who chooses to not work with you or work with somebody else, it's either A, they don't know you're in real estate, or B, they know you're in real estate and they don't trust you. And that's probably because of what you're putting out there in your speaking. So I would always look at in the mirror on something like that. Okay, Tammy, I hope that helped you. Now, before I continue with these, I've got a couple of other questions, Merrill and Todd, but before we do that, does anybody want to ask me a question? I do want to open up the call because I like this to be a little interactive. Now, I want to remind everybody to ask me a question. You hit *7 on your keypad, and that will take you off mute, and then I'll be able to hear you. It usually takes about 5 seconds for it to kick in, so be patient. Anybody have a question? *7 one time on the keypad, and that will take you off.
Hi, Carol. It's Merrill. How are you?
Good, Merrill. How are you doing, sweetie?
Pretty good. I guess you got my question in the email, right? About
yes,
the,
but let me
refresh
my yes, Merrill. Yes, I did get yours. Yes, about the listing that you got in Queens. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So the
all right,
question
well, listen,
is, what, okay. in your opinion, is the most effective way of basically just marketing it and getting as many? I'm already getting a lot of people just from putting it on MLS. But I know you're the expert, so I wanted to, contact you.
Well, I appreciate that, Merrill. Stay here on the call with me. I'll tell you the first of all, congratulations on getting the listing. It's in Fresh Meadow, Queens, yes?
Yes, yes.
And how much is it?
$777.
Okay, good. And did you get the commission that you wanted? You don't have to tell me what it is if you don't want to, or you can, I don't care. I just want to make sure you got what you wanted.
The commission was actually a little lower than I wanted, but the listing is in a very popular area. So it was kind of a wash, and I think it was worth it.
All right, well, good. If you've got a good listing, you think it's going to sell quickly. I want to say something about commissions, being that I just brought that up. To me, the commission is also a negotiating tool, not just for you and the seller, but also for you and the other agents. So if you have a listing that's going to sell pretty quick and you feel like, you can't negotiate, I always think it's better to have a standard fee and you never deviate from it. But if you need to make that exception from time to time, that's okay. I also tell homeowners that the commission is a marketing tool. See, what Merrill and everybody else on the call, when you are the listing agent, and I ask this in my classes and my seminars, I'll ask, when you are the listing agent, who's your audience that you're marketing the listing to? What do you want to get more of? And everybody always says, well, buyers. And actually,
right.
That's not true. Yeah, that's not true. When you are the listing agent, if you were to take a marketing class at college, Marketing 101, they would say, well, when you're selling a product, whatever the product is, you need to know who your target market is, age, men, female, et cetera. Well, as a listing agent, our target market is our fellow realtor. Now, mm-hmm. And when you start to look at it that way, you start to market differently, just slightly, but very impactful. And the concept is if you can get your fellow realtors in that market excited about showing your property, the buyers will naturally come from those showings. But also, you'll get other buyers from your own work because realtors are the more cynical of the two between a buyer and a realtor. So if you can impress, if you get the realtor, you're going to get the buyers. Now, with that said, Merrill, one of the biggest flaws that I've seen with most listing agents throughout the United States,
mm-hmm.
not just New York, is that they do really sloppy jobs with the MLS. And I'll give you, for instance, they don't verify the data. They don't verify square footage or taxes or any of that stuff if there's rent roll. So they don't verify data, number one. Number two is they leave blank fields in the MLS. To me, the MLS is like a billboard on the highway. I used to, Merrill, when I used to get a listing, I used to tell them, back in my day, because I'm an old fart.
No, you're not.
We had one listing agreement that had the data sheet. So it was all one form. Now we have lead paint disclosure, seller's disclosure, you know, blah, blah. There's so many forms. So my point is that I had the homeowner sign a blank listing agreement. The part that wasn't blank was the expiration date, the price, and the commission. But the data sheet, how many bedrooms, baths, all that stuff, was blank.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because I told the homeowner, Merrill, that, you know what, I don't want to rush this form because, to me, this is the billboard. I want to make sure I take the time. I only have so many characters. I only have a limited amount of space. And I want to use my words wisely to motivate other agents to show your property. So I'm going to do that back in my office. And that's what I used to say, Merrill. Now, let's just look at the – does this make sense so far?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, a couple other things. Is the commission. If I had a listing that, let's say, I'm just using it as an example, we're not price fixing. Let's say I had a 7% commission, and the tradition, at least in my market, 50-50. The selling broker would get half, and the listing office would get half. So that would be 3.5, 3.5. If I had a listing, Merrill, that I know is going to sell quickly, I would put out less than 3.5. I might put out 3 or 2.5, but let's just go with 3. I would keep 4 and put out 3. The opposite was true. If I had a listing that I think needed extra help and it was I needed more activity, well, maybe I would pay out 4 and I'd keep 3. So I put on the selling broker's commission what I thought was necessary to get the other agents motivated to show the property. The next thing is I'd make sure photos, well-taken photos, are used, especially – now, this is back in my day before Al Gore invented the Internet. So here, especially now with Realtor.com and everything else out there, it is so important that we use good photos, strong photos, because buyers are looking at those too. Even those virtual tours of a property is not a bad idea, not extremely necessary. I find that those virtual tours work really when the property is a big property, big square footage, you know, where there's an open kitchen, there's an open living room. Otherwise, pictures would do just fine. The other thing is broker's open house, Merrill. I always made sure that we had a strong turnout for broker's open house. Number one, and I just went through a whole sub-list, is that make sure you're motivating the other agents to show your property. That's number one. Number two is public open houses, I think, always work, especially in Queens. Number three is I think every listing is an opportunity to get more listings, especially in the months of January and February. Because there have been, especially in January, been so many homeowners saying, I'm going to wait till after the holidays, and unless the power agent sat in front of them and said, don't wait till after the holidays, you should do it now, we're going to see a surge of listings in January. So this is an opportunity. When you get a new listing, I would think more like, how can I promote that listing to the local neighbors, and maybe I'm going to stumble into another listing. So
well,
what
actually,
I would do
was the question.
Yeah.
No, what you just said was actually part of my question. What is the best way of promoting it, in your opinion?
Yeah. So I would do door knockings. I would do a neighborhood open house. Now, what a neighborhood open house is different from a public open house. You'd still do the public open house, but a neighbor open house, what you would do is you would pick a certain day before the public open house. You would
mm-hmm.
not advertise it, but you would do a mailing to the local neighbors. And I would go to the stationery store and get wedding invitation-looking types of, you know, you can get it at Staples Office Max. And I would print it on my local printer and make it look like a wedding invitation. And when they open it up, it's, you know, with a personal stamp on it. And when they open it up, it says, you're invited, dot, dot, dot. So that's the cover of the card. Then when they open up the card, it says you're invited to a neighborhood public neighborhood open house, and you need to put in there, Merrill, because the homeowners will not be home, they've asked me to manage this open house for the neighbors in case you know of anybody who's thinking about moving into the neighborhood. Now, what's brilliant about this idea, Merrill, is that number one is that anybody that comes to this, you know, is a nosy neighbor. They're not a potential buyer.
Why that's good.
Why that's good is because you're going to tour the house with them knowing they're a current homeowner as opposed to talking to them like they're a buyer. So you might ask them, how long have you lived in the, as you're showing them the house, how long have you lived in the neighborhood? What do you like best about it? Have you ever thought of moving? If you were going to move, where would you move to? Have you ever had an updated market analysis done on your property? Well, this property is probably going to generate a lot of buyers in the neighborhood. Maybe it's something you want to consider. You should at least find out how much your house is worth on an annual basis, just like your stock portfolio, retirement portfolio. You should know where you stand. Why don't I do this? I don't mind. Why don't I find the time in the next couple of days, come over, and I'll give you a market analysis, and I'll bring some information that will also help you. So now, Merrill, you're going to generate a ton of listing appointments from this neighborhood open house. And if you invite 50 people, you're probably going to get at least 30 neighbors coming. I'm sorry, say it again, hon.
I was just saying it's a great idea.
Let me tell you why, Merrill, it's also a great idea, because now when you do your public open house, which you would do after this, you know that you're not going to be wasting time with nosy neighbors because you took care of them already. And if they do come back to look at it a second time, you'll know they're a neighbor, so you won't talk to them the same way as you would a potential buyer from a public open house. Now, what you would tell the homeowner is the reason why you're doing this is that you find that the best buyers are the buyers that have an emotional connection to the neighborhood. See, buyers don't just buy a house, they buy the neighborhood. And if they already have emotional connection because they know of somebody who lives in the neighborhood or it's a family member, those people will pay a little bit more money for the house than a buyer who doesn't have that emotional connection. So you're telling the homeowner why this is good for them. This helps your business. It helps get more listings. So it's a windfall on so many different levels doing the neighborhood open house. You like that? Are you still there, Merrill? Did I lose you? All right, I'm still on time. I think, let me see. Gang, hang on 1 second. Let me just see. Interactive. All right, gang, you still there? Can you hear me, gang? Yes or no? Call, scream out. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, good. All right, I'll listen to everybody. Okay, I just put everybody back on mute. I just wanted to make sure I didn't lose the call because I think I lost Merrill. So, all right, so gang, that is my suggestion for Merrill. I think that all helped us. By the way, if any of you wanted to listen to what I just did, go pay attention to this time that we have at 11:34, and we're recording this call, so we're going to post it back on the website so you can listen to what I just did. Now, Todd Hammond, are you on the call? Todd Hammond? Todd, if you're on the call, what you'll do is hit *7 on your keypad one time, and that will take you off mute.
You got it. I'm here.
Hey, Todd. How are you, buddy?
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Todd, after I answer your question, gang, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some tips on what to do for 2016. Okay, so I'm going to give you a business plan, some suggestions. So, Todd, why don't you ask me your question, buddy?
I just really wanted you to speak on any particular strategy that comes to mind regarding a property you have listed. Maybe it's been listed for, you know, say 30, 45, 60-day time frame. Sellers are maybe beginning to show signs of getting itchy, and you know in your heart of hearts they probably should do a price reduction. But I should do it against the backdrop of our local market where now it's not a full-blown seller's market, but it's much more of a seller's market than it was 2, 3, 4 years ago. So as a listing agent, if you're not careful, you can come off sort of contradictory. You know, at listing time, you're looking your seller in the face and saying, look, every seller has every motivation to try to get the best possible price they can for this house in this given market. Inventory is slightly down. Prices are correcting. So, you know, that's encouraging for a seller. They're hearing, okay, good, well, we're going to stay pretty strong on our price. You present them with the market data, and you don't pull any punches with that. You don't sugarcoat it. And, you know, now it's probably time for maybe a modest price reduction. And what I usually do is I wait for the phone to call. When the seller says, hey, we're not getting any activity, how come we haven't had any offers? My retort is, you know, I'm waiting for that phone call every single day saying, great, the market's telling us something. But that's about all I got, you know.
Yeah, I got you, Todd. All right, here's what I would do. So just to be clear for everybody listening to the call, is that the bottom line is if you've got a listing, it's been on the market for however long, but based on your gut, it's like, you know what, it's time for a price adjustment. How do you have that conversation? You know, I here's what I would do, Todd. First of all, instead of waiting for them to call you, is I would be more proactive with that, because that could go either way with, you know, if I was your customer, if I was your client, right, and I called you and I say, hey, Todd, we're not getting activity. And your answer to me is, well, you know, maybe we need to look at something. Maybe I'd be like, well, why am I calling, like, you know, again, I'm from New York, so my attitude would be a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I'm already on the offensive. Do you follow me, Todd? And you're putting yourself on the defensive.
Yep.
So what I would do is you can create that same concept that you said by being proactive, and it would go something like this. Hey, Todd, this is Daryl. David, how you doing? Good, good. Todd, listen, I was looking at, it's the new year, and I was looking at a bunch of my clients. I was looking at your listing. I was looking at the activities. I was looking at the market. And, you know, I'm noticing that I don't think that we're getting as many showings as we should be with going into the new year. And what I saw happen in December with some other listings and some other properties, when I compare yours to theirs, is another reason why I got concerned. How do you feel? Do you feel like we're getting the – are you happy with the activity we're getting?
Right. I see. See, sort of.
So I – and if you ask that question, Todd, they're going to say, no matter what the activity is, they're always going to say, no, I want more, because until their house is sold, they're not going to be happy. Do you follow me?
Correct.
So I'm still getting that answer from them, but I'm being proactive with the call versus waiting for them. That's the
I like that better. I don't, and when I say, you know, I kind of sit back on my laurels and wait for that particular phone call if I think it may happen, it's against the backdrop of them getting a regular market update, ideally via email, showing how many hits they're getting on the internet, and how many calls we've had, how many showings we've had, et cetera, et cetera. Feedback every time there's a showing and all that kind of stuff. So the groundwork is sort of laid, but I still, to your point, I like the idea of having an excuse to pick up the phone and sort of calling them out on it, because the way you paint the picture there's really, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to disagree? They go, yeah, three showings in a month, that's fine with me.
They
ain't going to say it, you know?
All right. Now, if you did get somebody who said that,
Jesus.
Which you probably would, but if you did, here's what that's actually telling you. These people are not committed to selling.
Yeah.
If somebody was that lackadaisical, right, if they said, no, we're getting 10 shows, it's good for me, you know, no, keep doing what you're doing, Todd, I'd be concerned about that. And if they told me, so that's number one. And number two is, if they tell me that they're happy with the work that I'm doing, that's not a bad thing either. I would still maybe, if I still think that we need to make an adjustment, then I'd say, well, all right, then I'll keep doing what we're doing. I will say, though, I if you want to get this property sold before the first quarter, and there's going to be more houses coming on the market, you know, I can keep doing what I'm doing, but I am anticipating we're going to have more competition. More competition means that we may not, you know, sell at the number that we want. So I think we got a window here before we get more listings on the market that maybe we should consider being more aggressive. What do you think? Well, what I like to do is come on over and sit with you and just show you what I'm thinking and what my plan is. So I would still somehow try and turn that call around if you want that price adjustment. The second thing I'd say, Todd, is that if you're doing all that stuff, and I hope everybody heard what you just said, which is you are sending them market updates. By the way, Todd, how many listings do you currently have right now?
I'm down to 6 or 7.
Okay, cool. How many did you get all last year, roughly?
Oh, Jesus. I don't
know. All right, it's all right.
I'm pretty embarrassed. I can't say it. But that's, I don't know, 30, maybe 40.
Okay, all right, that's what I thought. Okay, so Todd, the fact that you're doing the market updates and everything else, showing them the activities, showing them the showings, your advertising, all that stuff, that's awesome that you're doing that. And that's a failing for most agents, so good for you. Now, what I would do to help you, being that you're already doing that, Todd, is I would have a phone call with all my sellers that you want to have a price adjustment and tell them I'd like to come by and do a review where we are going into the new year. I want us to make sure that we're on target with our goals and objectives. I want to make sure nothing's changed on your end. I want to make sure that that we're doing what we need to do to get the property sold. So I would set up that face-to-face appointment. The next thing I would do is when you go over there. Hang on a second, Todd. Todd, are you in Daytona Beach?
Yes.
Okay, because I got somebody from that's making some noise here, and I just wanted to mute them. So are you still with me, Todd?
I'm still with you.
All right, good. So I want to make sure I didn't mute you. So, Todd, when you go over there to have that price adjustment conversation, what I would do is take a summary of all the stuff you've been sending them, because it's very possible that they may not have been paying too much attention. You know, sometimes when you're really good at customer service, you're sending them updates and you're sending them the letters and all that stuff.
Right.
You know, oh, Todd's great, but they're not really paying attention. So I would gather all that stuff up to bring to that meeting and review what you've sent them over the past 30, 60 days, whatever. I would also show them in a calendar format. You know, you take Microsoft Publisher and you print out that calendar, you know, December and November, and I would handwrite in there, you know, when you ran an ad, when you did an open house, when there was how many showings on that day. So I would actually take a calendar and do a summary of all the hard work that you've done in the last 60 days. Are you following me?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Now, I would show them, so this is what's happened. Here's what I've been doing, da-da-da-da. Now, here's my concern, Mr. and Mrs. Seller. You know, if I've been doing all this marketing, and we're doing all this activity, and we're generating all this activity, but we haven't even gotten an offer, or we got just one offer, whatever the scenario is, Todd, I would say, you know, what do you guys think the problem must be? And have them say, well, what do you think, Todd? You think we should lower the price? So, well, you know, it's marketing 101. I mean, if we're putting it out there and I'm doing all this hard marketing, we're getting advertising, we're doing all that, and people are still, they're saying to us, well, we don't like the house at this price. At the same token, let me show you some properties in the area that have sold. And then I would show them that. Todd, something that a lot of agents don't do, and I think they should do, is they do those CMAs about what's sold, but what they don't show a homeowner is what's currently on the market in that same style house. And what I used to tell homeowners, Todd, is that, you know what sold says that this is what's happened, but what it doesn't tell us is what our current competition is. And I want to show you something, Mr. and Mrs. Hanana. Somebody's looking for a 4-bedroom, 2-bath colonial in this general vicinity. Let me show you what else they're looking at. We already know what we have, but let's see what our competition is. I mean, that's business 101. Know your competition, strengths, and weaknesses. And here's the strength of this property. The strength of this property has the in-ground pool, has this, and it has that. And they're asking X amount of dollars. Our weakness is we don't have this and that, and we're actually asking more. So a buyer, if they had a choice between that property and yours, which property do you think they're going to sit by? So I would bring all this to bear to have that conversation. Is this helping, Todd, with what I'm saying?
It is, and to your point, when I have a house listed, I make sure, usually at weekly intervals, so 4 times a month, the seller is getting, I just put them on a drip like they're a customer looking at active listings. So I'll pull comps that are, say, within 10% of square footage under air and or similar bedrooms, bathrooms, and other appointments, so they can see, you know, every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday, whatever it is, what is, you know, within a half a mile of them, north and south on the beachside community where I primarily work, what what they're going up against. But to your point, I think the value is stopping the music, hauling my carcass out there to their house and getting face-to-face with them in the off chance that they've done exactly what you just said. They go, oh, there's another email from Todd, another market update from Todd. That's nice. They just kind of gloss over it because they're Christmas shopping or whatever they're doing. And if I go out and sit with them at the dining room table, I spoon-feed it to them, then there can be no selective amnesia later, right?
You know, and I'll tell you that exactly, Todd, exactly what you're saying. And there's another piece to it, too. There's two other pieces to this. Is that, and actually I'm going to speak to negotiating in a second that highlights this. You know, when I teach negotiating, which we're not going to do on this call because we only got 15 more minutes, but when I teach the negotiating, I tell my students, you have to go in person to present the offer. And a lot of agents don't do this, and it always blows my mind because, to me, this is the most important conversation. This is what you've been hired for. I mean, if we're willing to have a face-to-face conversation to get the listing, why would we now disrespect the homeowner and the offer by trying to do it over the phone? Now, of course, if the homeowner doesn't live in the house, it's a second home, they're on vacation, that's a different scenario. But that's an important conversation that needs to be had eye to eye. Now, if you're going to have this, if you want your client to adjust their price because that's the best interest for them based on their goals and commitment, then I think it makes sense that that be an important conversation be done face-to-face. That's number one. Number two is that you can control their interpretation of the data. See, when we're sending – by the way, you keep doing what you're doing. You know it works. I love that. You're sending them the updates on a regular basis. But you don't know how they're interpreting it. You know, we've said that maybe they're not even paying attention. That's true, but they may be. They may be looking at some of the listings you're emailing them about their competition, and they may say, oh, my house is nicer than this one, because they're looking at just the picture. But if you now bring that data and you sit down with them and you show them that same listing, you can control the perception that they have about it. Is this making sense, Todd?
No, yeah, let them see it through my viewpoint. With my realtor eyes.
Exactly. So now you're coaching them, right? So, and the other thing, too, I think, Todd, that's real important for everybody to understand this, is that when you're having that price adjustment conversation, you're also going to be speaking to their commitment. You know, when people put their house on the market, they have a committed to a next level. They want to accomplish something. And as they're going through their life and the property's getting sold, you know, they may get frustrated. A lot of stuff may happen. So when you bring to the surface, you know, I just want to get clear, nothing's changed in our plans, right? We still want to move to, you know, California. The job still looks good. By the way, how is the job going? Have they been calling you saying, where the hell are you? Okay, so they're getting a little anxious to get you there. Is that what you're saying? Okay, good. Have you guys started looking at properties over there yet? All right, are you excited? The kid's doing good? All right, well, listen, here's what I think we need to do moving forward. See, Todd, what I just did is I brought to the surface up front in the conversation, it's not about selling their house. It's about their commitment to moving to California and starting their life over. If I have that on the table, they're going to be more flexible, more committed to adjusting that price because they want to get the hell out of there because they're listening through the commitment to moving. Is this making sense?
It is. Without boring you with personal details, the two listings that I'm thinking of right now are sellers that are going to stay in the local market, but they're leaving, say, a condo and going to a single family. So they're going from a single family to a larger single family, or they're leaving the beachside and moving over to the mainland. So the second part of their mission, finding the new property, it's a little foggy for them. You know, the vision is a little foggy because they've got this white elephant that they can't see around right in front of them, which is we must have to buy new. Comprende?
Right.
Yeah. So whatever. Not to divert the conversation, but.
All right. Cool. Now, one other thing I want to say too. I'm going to give you, and there's two price objections I'm going to give you, and Todd, I don't know if you have the set of CDs from the seminar, but
I do.
You do. Okay. So have you listened to the Price It Right CDs yet?
Not yet. No.
All right, if you listen to that, that will also speak to this. There's a couple of metaphors and analogies on there. One of them is about stale bread. You know, if you go to the supermarket and the loaf of bread stays on the shelf too long, what do? Is it gets stale, and so some supermarkets, what they do is slash the price to get rid of the bread. So even though the market is improving, or even though the market's good, or however you want to say that, Todd, the longer you sit on the shelf, the more stale you become real estate. And so we don't want to become stale bread, because then it's going to hurt us ultimately on our price. We're going to have to slash the price and then move the property. So that's one analogy to help you with the price adjustment. The second one is when people said, yeah, but I did all these improvements. You know, my house is special. You know, did you do those improvements because you wanted to sell the house, or did you do the improvements for your own personal enjoyment? Well, our own personal enjoyment. We wanted a nicer pool, wanted this. I said, well, that's the only return you're going to get with that investment is your personal, appreciation of it. And the last thing I'll say, Todd, and then I'm going to go into the goal setting part for 2016 is, things change. You know, I own Facebook. Facebook is down from $107 a share. It came out today at about $100. The market is down terribly. There's a lot of panic because of what happened in Asia. So my point is, real estate's the same way. How it was in November and December may not be what it is in January and February.
Right.
Good or bad, it fluctuates. Yeah. Okay, good. Todd, did this help you, buddy?
No, it did. I appreciate all the time you spent on.
All right, buddy. Thank you. All right, okay. So I'm going to put you back on hold, Todd. And everybody, let me just tell you real quick, and then we're going to come to the end of our call, is a couple of things to help you going into 2016. Number one is make sure that you figure out how much money you need for 2016. This is very basic. We already should have done this in November, December, but I know some of you have not. So it's a very simple formula. You know, if the average commission in your market is $5,000 and you need $50,000 in a year, you know, you need 10 sales. Actually, you need a little bit more because you got to pay some taxes, right? So I would figure 12 deals. Now, if you need 12 deals, it's one deal a month. How many listings do you need? You can't build a business based on buyers. You have to build it based on your inventory. You all should remember the shoe store analogy. So how many listings in your inventory do you need to get in order to generate those 12 sales? If one sale a month, and if, let's say, 50% of your listings sell, it means you should always have two listings in the shoe store every month, and that would generate your one sale every month. So I'm being very basic with you, but you need to have some kind of goal. That's number one. Number two is go to my Facebook account, because I'm posting some videos that talk about 2016 and goals. I'm going to share some with you. If you haven't been to my Facebook, go to Daryl Speaks. So it's facebook.com/DARRYL Speaks, and there you'll find my business page. One of the things you need to do is set monthly goals. So I want you to set your goal, but set monthly goals. And the reason why you want to set monthly goals is it's more urgent. This is one of the videos I'm going to be posting this week. So don't just set the 12-month goal, set a monthly goal. Next thing to do is when you're putting your monies together, figuring it out, make sure you're putting some money away for savings. I know some of you are really bad at this, and you need to have some kind of plan. And if you're old in years and you haven't been doing this, you're going to have to save a lot more, unfortunately, if you're ever going to want to retire. And use that money, buy some real estate, do something, but you got to make sure you're saving for yourself. Next thing is, if set a quarterly goal too. If you were to look at your business and your life, what's the things that you want to accomplish by the end of March? Make it visual. Post it up on your walls in your house. So create some visual representation. Even if you just took a Word document, made a list of what you're committed to, and you made it a big font, like 20 points, you don't have to cut out pictures and stuff like that. It would be nice to do a collage of photos that represent your goals. But if you don't want to waste your time doing that, at least before you finish the day, make a list, print it out. Next thing is, make sure you have a good listing appointment you feel strong about. You know, this, I'm going to tell you, if there's anything for you to focus on in the month of January, if you didn't hear me say it before, if you missed it, I'm going to repeat it. And that is, there have been a ton of homeowners saying in the month of December, I'm going to wait till after the holidays, and then I'm going to put my house on the market. Well, here it is. It's the first Monday, the first month of the beginning of the year. In the next, I even say maybe 14 days, is an opportunity for you to get a surge of listings. So what I would do is I would, watch this, I would find those FSBOs in November and December, and I would be calling those people now. Because those people, they probably took it off the market, they didn't have the activity they wanted, et cetera. So I would do strong November, December FSBOs. And expires, I'd go to my MLS and do a printout of everything that expired December 31st or January 1st. There is a ton of listings right now you should be getting. And those of you that are signed up with RedX, you can go back 6 months and find past FSBOs when you log into the website online. So definitely do that. Make sure, next thing is, make sure you get organized. You know, organize your leads. Organize how you track inventory. You know, you've heard me talk about creating a listing inventory chart where at the bottom it has the months, January, December, over to the from top to bottom over the left, you know, in a chart, like you'd see a stock chart. You'd have the number of listings in your inventory. Start tracking how many listings you currently have available in your listing inventory. Let's see what else. Going back to your listing appointment, make sure you have a strong listing conversation that you feel good about. Do not wait to get perfect. You're not going to get perfect. You never. I mean, people that are artists or, you know, whether it's acting, singing, painting, even kung fu, the mastery is not a place you ever get to. It's a place to live from. So don't ever think you're going to get perfect in your real estate business. Real estate is more of an art. It's not a science. So as long as you're committed to improvement and commit and live from mastery, but just understand you're never going to get to mastery. The last thing is the shiny penny list. We're, you know, again, I'm not going to teach it. I'm giving you an overview business plan, but just work the shiny pennies. Those are the best of the best in every price range. When a buyer wants to talk to you, should look at property, just show them the shiny pennies. Don't waste your time working buyers. Right now, next 30 days, listings. Now, I have like two minutes left. Does anybody want to ask something or say something? Hit star 7 on your keypad one time, and then I'm going to close this out. Yeah,
hello?
Who do I got from? Yes, go ahead.
Gerald, it's Janet Livingston in Atlanta. I think you
are. Hi, darling.
Coming.
I can't hear you too well. Go ahead. What? Yes,
I believe you're going to be in Atlanta in January. Where and what day?
Yes, ma'am. I am coming to Atlanta on January 12th. We actually moved it to the convention center because it sold out at the Board of Realtors. Yeah, I'll tell you where to get the information. Everybody on this call, you should always check this site because you'll see my schedule when I'm coming to town. And that website is kickoffseminar.com, K-I-C-K-O-F-F. Seminar.com, all one word, kickoffseminar.com, no dashes, no space. You'll see the schedule, and you'll see the date and the location in Atlanta. Okay, hon?
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, make sure you give me a hug when I come, all right?
You bet.
All right, thank you. Anybody else?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, hon.
Hi, Daryl. This is Whitney from Brooklyn. I just had a follow-up question about the information you were speaking, I think his name was Todd, who was selling property.
Yeah.
What changes would you make to those that advice if the seller is not in the property and it's an investment property and they seem to be committed to price as opposed to the speed of the sale?
Great question, Whitney. Great question. So I'll do this quickly so we can finish on time or close on time. You know, when you're dealing with investors, that's a different animal. It's all about the numbers. So there's no motion. There's no commitment. So there are exceptions to what I just said. But for the most part, Whitney, what you have to do is look at it from a financial business standpoint. Does it make sense for him to lower the price to sell it now versus waiting for the market to catch up? And what I would do is show data of what the trend is in your market area? Are prices going up, going down? Number two is I would look at how much is it costing him to carry that property. If it's vacant, then every month he doesn't sell it and it's costing him $2,000 a month. Well, he's inadvertently reducing the price by $2,000 a month because he's eating into his profit. Now, if his property is going up $1,000 a month based on appreciation, he's actually losing $1,000 a month. So you got to kind of look at it's all about numbers for the investor. Does that make sense, huh?
Yeah, it does. The data of the type of property in the area for comparing for him, and also let him know that, you know, to try to compare that get him to do a price improvement based on his cost per month.
Exactly. What is
like
the cost?
What's it costing him to hold it? Uh-huh.
Right. And here's the other thing too. Like any investment, if it's costing him $1,000 a month
it might be costing him three.
All right, let's say it's costing him $3,000 a month to pay his mortgage, interest, and insurance. Don't forget all the numbers, darling. Beef it up.
Okay.
Utilities, insurance, taxes, all that stuff. $3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, if a property's not being lived in, it definitely does get worn down. So periodically, you got to go in and clean up the place. If you don't, you get cobwebs. It does diminish in value. So if it's costing him $3,000 a month to own this, and let's say property values in the market are going up 5%. Let's say that comes out to $4,000 a month. So his property's going up 4. He's losing 3. So he's making $1,000 a month. Here's the next part of that formula. Here's the next part of the formula. Okay, it looks like he's making $1,000 a month. But if he sold it today and took that cash and invested in something else, would it give him a higher return for that investment?
Right.
Did you understand what I just said?
Okay, versus higher return of cash put into a different investment.
Yeah, if he put in the stock market, if he's getting 10% of return on it, well, that's high. I get. All right. If let's say the stock market average is 7% return, and his property is showing only a 5% return, well, damn, it would be better that he sell the property, get at a discount, take the cash, and put it in the stock market than leaving it in this property when you do all the numbers. So you just got to get a little proficient with these numbers, okay? All right,
got it.
I got to go, gang. So did that help you, hon?
Yes, thank you so much. Happy New Year,
everyone. You're so welcome, Wendy. All right, Happy New Year. I'm going to take everybody off hold so we can hear everybody. Everybody, you're all off hold. Hi.
Hi.
Happy New Year from Papa Tommy.
Hi, Carol. Happy
New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy
New
Year.
I love you, Carol. Next call. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Carol.
Bye-bye.
I love you, Daryl. Take care, my friend.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you.